everybody, and I would like to welcome you to Video Game Madness 2012. That's right. We are sticking our hands into the NCAA tournament. But, of course, it's not basketball. It's not, you know, Vanderbilt and all those crazy guys' Cinderella stories. Well, we could, I guess, have a Cinderella story.
We could. Mm-hmm.
But we are going to take 16 of what we feel, disclaimer, what we feel are some of the most iconic video game characters or entities that we have looked back and seen. Now, there are some that we feel are also iconic that didn't make our list, but bear in mind, this is not the last time we're going to be doing Video Game Madness. So
It all comes down to the calculation, remember, that's asinine and has
the ranking system, right. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Those that were excluded by the ranking system. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So here we go. I'm going to let the panel introduce themselves, and we're going to start off with this crazy Video Game Madness. To my right.
Martians. Oh, wait, Anton.
Right. Live via satellite.
Rainbow Sherbert or Derek Newton.
Rainbow Sherbert. It's been a minute. Donald.
This is Donald.
Oh!
Cleric Deb.
The doctor is in.
Absolutely.
Lawful stupid Josh is here.
Wow. And the factory of all your established facts. I'm the host. I'm Mike. So, we're going to break down the matches for you and give you our professional opinion. As gamers, we feel ourselves to be professional.
I mean we don't get paid.
Yes.
Please don't sue us. We love everyone. So, here we go. In matchup one, we have the master of your sink and plumbing, Mario versus Miss Pac-Man.
Ooh.
Cleric Deb, why don't you give us your diagnosis on the outcome?
All right. Well, let's break down our competitors for just a second, shall we? So, Miss Pac-Man. So, she came to us in the year 1981. That was the year I was born, by the way. And she was the unauthorized sequel to Pac-Man. Pac-Man's producer did not make her. She was
scandalous.
Made by... I know, it really was. So, however, she came out and she was so wildly popular that the publisher basically swallowed her and said, oh, no, it was ours all along. And she became part because it did so well. So, the big stuff about Ms. Pac-Man is... honestly, the thing is, she's huge. She's been in... 20th year anniversary, which came out in 2001. They actually brought her back as a video game. But to bring it home to all of you, she was listed in the 2009, I'm sure I tell you the right, yeah, 2009 Game Informer said in all their wisdom, Ms. Pac-Man was the 10th on their list of the top 200 games of all time, saying that it trumped the original Pac-Man in nearly every way. So, girl power, Ms. Pac-Man won above Pac-Man in this matchup.
That's great, Deb, but let's bear in mind we're Ms. Pac-Man versus Mario today.
Yeah, we're going to be mentioning Mario last because, you know, what's there to be said about the man? So, Mario, his very first game was Donkey Kong in the year 1981. Look at that. Also the same year I was born.
So we have some juggernauts of 1981.
Exactly. And I was the one that got to talk about it. I'm loving it. So, Mario, he is the quintessential video game character. He has been in so many different genres now. It would be hard to list. I won't list all of them because I can't. He's been in racing games, puzzle games, party games, role-playing games, fighting games, and sports games. He usually finds himself wandering through Mushroom Kingdom and rescuing Princess Peach out of Bowser's grasp, but he has done a ton of other things in the process. And make sure I'm reading this to you right as well. So he is considered by most people to be the most famous video game character in history. He has been named an icon. His video games have sold more than 200 million copies. He is the best-selling video game franchise of all time. And he was one of the first video game characters inducted in the Walk of Game in 2005. Go ahead and look that up on Wikipedia. It's pretty cool. He walked down the line beside a couple of other characters that you might know called Link and Sonic. They were the first to be inducted. So, Mario, number one seed versus Ms. Pac-Man, number eight seed.
So, Derek's. So, well, that was
her
bad.
Her name is Deb.
I was going to say Doctor, and then it just went to Derek, Rainbow Sherbert action. Anyway, so Deb, what are the keys to success? What are the keys to success for Mario and Ms. Pac-Man?
All right. Well, for Ms. Pac-Man to be able to pull this off, she's really got to use every single thing in her ability. I think knowing that if the ghosts are able to help her out and attack Mario, I think that's going to be a huge advantage. Also, if she can get to the big dots, she can gain some speed, and that's also going to be able to help her. However, Mario is a really tough opponent. His strength is that he is so versatile. He's been in every form of game imaginable. He's seen probably just about every enemy imaginable. So it's going to be hard for her to come up with something that he's never seen before. So my pick here is I think that Mario's experience and longevity is going to give him the win.
So you're saying the only way Ms. Pac-Man could defeat Mario is if she were a necromancer?
Well, yes, I think that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
So even though the wildly successful Ms. Pac-Man and her little bow,
mm-hmm.
You believe that Mario and his experience in the plumbing world and that of Toadstool and Princess Peach is going to come out ahead.
I think so. I think the number of times he's had to face Bowser and he always comes out on top. He's got every experience imaginable. He's got 3D experience and 2D. He's been in multiplayer games. I just honestly think he's going to be able to pull from that vast amount of knowledge, and he's going to be able to pull this one off.
Well, that's awesome. We have him. We have you now on record that Mario is winning.
My expert opinion, Mario will win.
Awesome. As we're moving right along, we're going to stay in the left bracket. We have the next matchup, which is Link versus Marcus Fenix.
Ooh. Oh, my goodness. In us all being professionals and so forth, I'm probably the guy in the mailbag when it comes to this one. I work down in the basement because I have no idea. I've never really personally played any of the Zelda games, and I have not played the Gears of War games. I'm being honest. So I think the best route for me saying I'm an expert is I am just like all of the fans. They're taking an opportunity to look at this and going, why in the world did they pair these two up?
That was the ranking.
It was the ranking. Yes, we have a 2-7 here with Link in a 2 seed with Marcus Fenix in a 7. And you know, just looking at the bracket, I'm going to have to go with longevity in terms of why they were higher seeded. But I have to.
If you clearly look at your bracket, Link is number 3. Marcus Fenix is 6.
Oh wow! Ooh. See, this is why I'm in the basement.
Drama.
That's what I get for not writing it down properly.
You're losing that job.
Mm-hmm. I guess so. No, I'm just the guy who does the disclaimers.
Clearly.
Please don't say
him. He loves everyone.
Exactly. So with Link being the 3 seed, Link's big things from what I've seen and experienced from watching videos, reading up or whatever, is he's a shield and sword user. Most recently in the Nintendo Wii games, where you're, of course, using your Wiimote and Nunchuck to be Link in that purpose. And he also uses a bow in those games, something that was not used as often in the older games. However, he is not under the protection so much as Marcus Fenix may be, but apparently my wife has a counteract.
I just want to make sure that everyone's aware that Link does have an advantage by being a southpaw. He is left-handed. And because of that, I think he may be able to get an advantage because people aren't always as prepared for left-handed strikes.
I will tell you that in the current Wii games, you can play it left or right.
So Link is ambidextrous.
That's a big thing.
That's a good point.
Yes, it is. Marcus Fenix, on the other hand, is right-handed, so we'll go with that then, at least from everything I've witnessed. But he has an arsenal, and I'm not talking like a military arsenal, a science fiction arsenal at his disposal. But on that note, he relies heavily on cover. That is, that game itself is based a lot on working in and out of cover. And Link tends to be the one to go full force into a fight. So maybe you have a bravery versus intelligence fight going. And in reality, bravery is not always the best. But I think in this case that Marcus Fenix and his guns and multiple explosions from a prowess that way would probably win out. And with the current generation and most of our listeners and so forth, I have a feeling that Marcus Fenix is going to get the votes. I do believe and agree that Marcus Fenix would probably pummel Link also, just from a standpoint that Fenix is a big guy.
You can't count out, you cannot count out the chainsaw at the end of the gun.
That's right. That, yeah.
Yeah, but you, I mean, at least Link apparently has a fairy with him that can.
Yeah.
Yeah, but a little does magic. Marcus Fenix have a magic flute? I don't think Marcus Fenix has a magic flute.
Exactly. I mean, hello, ocarina.
That
time.
Would be an ocarina.
That's right.
Mario has a magic flute.
Yes.
Yes, he does as well.
Well, I was so actually thinking
green,
about it earlier.
So does the Green
the
Power Ranger, but we're not including him either.
Oh.
Yeah. We could do a whole bracket on the Power Rangers against each other. That'd be horrible. But
yes, it would.
Yeah, anyways.
And I wouldn't show up.
Yeah, I know.
And I would not show up.
Oh, whatever.
So you're saying Marcus Fenix.
I am going. I think Marcus Fenix is going to pull the upset victory.
The upset.
What do you all think out there, guys?
The keys to success here between Link and Marcus Fenix is Link has to get him early and be in his face with his shield and his left paw and his ambidextrousness.
Yes.
And catch him unaware.
Mm-hmm.
And for Marcus Fenix, he has to utilize cover and make Link continue to run to him while he gets to barrage him with futuristic weapons.
Mm.
Sounds good?
Sounds great.
That's awesome. Next, we have number 4 at Solid Snake versus number 5, Sub-Zero.
All right. This is a very interesting matchup. You're talking about two different competitors, two totally different style of combat prowess and game in general, if you're looking at the actual gameplay. Sub-Zero comes from a long line of very aggressive fighting games. Sub-Zero and technically his brother in the storyline, also known as Sub-Zero, both are what they call cryomancers. They have the ability to bend and shape ice and water at their will. And so that is a huge tool for Sub-Zero to use. If he can catch Solid Snake, you know, unawares or in any way aggressively advancing towards him, he can always freeze him to keep him from continuing on or to gain the advantage on him. He also has an advanced combat style with being able to use Dragon Kung Fu. And like I said, he has a brother who has the exact same powers and happens to appear in the second Mortal Kombat game and then everyone after that. So there's a family, you know, there's a family thing going there. So, you know, you're talking about kind of technically two opponents versus one. Now, don't get me wrong. Solid Snake is, he's known as Solid Snake for a reason. He's got some awesome, stealth talent, some stealth training, advanced combat training. And he's also, his major role in his games is that he is such a weapons expert that he can actually go after these Metal Gear devices and defuse them and stop them from being released on, you know, whatever nation or whatever world they might be on at the time. So, you know, I think this is a really good seeding for fourth and fifth because they both have some really great advantages. I would have to say, in order for Solid Snake to really get his opponent on his heels, he's gonna have to utilize his stealth training more than anything, because all Sub-Zero has to do is if he sees him in his line of sight, all he's got to do is freeze him, and then he's automatically taken over the advantage. So I'm gonna say Sub-Zero is probably gonna have the biggest advantage going into this matchup. I'm going to predict him being the winner, but I think it's going to be a really close game, really close vote, because both of these guys, they've just got a lot of talent. So
that's awesome. I'm excited about Solid Snake and Sub-Zero. I think that's going to be a great matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two guys that are going to slug it out and have a good time. Next up, oh man, this one's near and dear to my heart. But and in the interest of fairness, I didn't take this as my matchup. Number 2 versus number 7, we have Cloud from Final Fantasy VII versus Simon Belmont from the Castlevania series. Ooh. Tony, why don't you tell us the keys to success for each person in order for them to achieve victory?
Well, as somebody who is kind of biased against Final Fantasy, but I'm not letting that hold that against me. Simon Belmont is a very, very old character. He has had some recent refreshments. I'd say recent. The last time Simon Belmont was in a game was the Nintendo 64. He is not in the new Castlevania. But he is a vampire hunter. He uses a whip, a chain whip, and a Morningstar whip. He's from the 1600s. He's an older style character. He doesn't really have any special powers. He's just
a dude with a whip.
A dude with a whip that sometimes has a Morningstar on the end of it. Versus Cloud Strife from Final Fantasy, who has
a dude with a sword.
A dude with a sword. A very, very large broadsword. Who, if you've watched any of the movie series or know much of the lore, he doesn't necessarily have powers, per se, but he does have a lot of almost superhuman abilities. Especially if you've watched like any of the movies, he can jump really, really, really high. That's just one scene that from the movie that just keeps flashing back to my head. Is he's basically jumping up a tower of people, going up to fight. I don't remember what the thing's name was. But they're not really special characters in either way. Neither of them have great abilities. But in a fight, I would put my money on Cloud. He can move a lot faster than Simon Belmont could. Even though that brings a very, very bad taste to my mouth.
Minor victory.
I still hate Final Fantasy.
It's all good. It's all good. Donald?
In addition to some of the abilities that Tony brought up, Cloud also has the use of Materia, if you ever got into Final Fantasy VII, which can eventually give him some pretty cool abilities and things like that.
So. And good Lord, don't piss him off because he has a limit break.
Yeah, but don't
forget, Simon Belmont went after Dracula, the most iconic vampire of all time. And
I don't know.
You've
got to have some serious resolve.
Yeah, to deal with that.
I think I'd be willing to put Dracula up against Sephiroth. I'm just saying. I think that would be a really good matchup. You know?
I understand.
Future matchups.
Yeah.
With sound effects.
Right?
We should do a bad guy.
Okay. Now we're shifting gear into the right conference. Derek, as opposed to the wrong conference.
Sorry.
We're now in the right conference. Derek, you get the honors of covering the number one seed in the right conference, Mega Man, versus the number 8th seed, Q-Bert. Ladies and gentlemen, these were all ranked by the ranking system.
Please keep in mind the ranking system was just as asinine as it was in the beginning of this episode.
Let's actually start with the stronger of the two.
So you're starting with Q-Bert. Okay, let's go.
Yes, we're starting with Q-Bert. Q-Bert is actually one of the, and it may actually be the first puzzle game. It's for basically 95% of the people probably listening to this. Q-Bert, let me describe who he is.
An anteater.
He looks like a big anteater. He looks like Alf if his nose was cut off. He hops around this pyramid, changing the colors of the pyramid. And he's pursued by a snake and these falling balls and such. And he can jump on these little swirling platforms that look like Simon Says games and escape and then have the snake jump over off the pyramid into his doom. Each stage is cleared when the requisite color. All the little blocks are the requisite color. It was released in 1982. That is 3 years earlier than Tetris.
Wow.
So, so you got to give it up for the one little guy that started the genre. And it was very successful at its time. So now moving over to someone who has a little bit more abilities. In fact, originally Qbert was going to be able to shoot bullets through his nose, but they took that ability away for ease of gameplay. But
because you only had one button,
pretty much,
and it was but, either jump or shoot.
Yeah,
pretty much. Now, 5 years after Qbert was introduced, Mega Man was introduced. In Japan, he's called Rockman, and that is based on rock and roll, because his sister is Roll. And originally, he was going to be called Rainbow Man. I kid you not.
So it was meant to be.
Rainbow Sherbert!
It all comes full circle.
Woohoo!
And the reason why is because he changes colors, because basically he's a...
weird dude?
He changes his armor changes as he gets new abilities from his defeated foes. He's the ultimate chameleon. In this matchup, you've got two guys that can really jump around really well. I think that in Qbert's world, he actually may have an edge over Mega Man. Ooh. Because there is no weapon for him to steal from Qbert. And as Qbert just jumps around and is very flexible in where he can jump, Mega Man just may jump off the pyramid just out of sheer frustration.
he commits suicide?
Yes. If it was in Mega Man's universe, I'd say that Mega Man certainly does have the upper hand because he has a lot of weapons at his disposal. But I'd say for this bracket, I'm going to have to go with Qbert.
Really?
Wow, calling for the upset.
Okay. Yes, I am.
All right.
Because Qbert can really go into three dimensions, and Mega Man somewhat can't. Mm. So I'm going to go with Qbert.
All right.
Well, I didn't see that coming.
Mm-mm.
None of us did.
He's looking for a Cinderella story.
Yeah, that's a big upset.
This would be the Cinderella story.
Yeah, it would be. All right.
Okay. That's exciting. I'm excited to see how that works out.
Yeah.
As we're moving right along, I get to cover the number 3 seed versus the number 6 seed. Number 3 is straight out of cryogenics, frozen in time, Master Chief from the Halo series.
Oh.
Wow. Good luck with this one. And the number 6 seed, Lara Croft from the Tomb Raider series.
Hmm.
Oh, nothing there? Yeah, I didn't think so.
Right. From Chihuahua?
The Halo series. The Halo series originated November 15th of 2001. Very recent series. Tomb Raider came out in 1996 with the iconic female-figured Indiana Jones version with some guns. That's what the game was based on, was the theory behind Indiana Jones. And digging through temples and finding treasure, and it was a very adventurous style game, versus Halo, which is you are a super soldier tasked with beating down the Flood and eventually the Covenant and eventually the Flood and saving the world or the universe. I did some interesting digging for this matchup, and I believe that these things are the keys to success. So pay attention here. This could get interesting. I believe that Lara Croft has a way to actually defeat Master Chief if she catches him with some of her arsenal. As you all know, Lara Croft has a huge arsenal available to her, not unlike Master Chief, who has a huge arsenal as well. But if she catches Master Chief with a rocket launcher or something of the nature, it could possibly reduce his shields, which is a big advantage that Master Chief has over her. She could catch him and reduce his shields, and then her shots will start taking effect on his armor. Because it only takes a 30 caliber bullet, as mentioned in the Halo series books, a 30 caliber bullet to penetrate his armor. So if she's using 45s, which you know how that is, if she's using 45s, then she could very easily punch through his armor once she gets past his shield. The issue is that stupid shield. Master Chief is equipped with a shield that will absorb damage, and it's been clearly defined in the book series that he can soak 50 and 60 caliber bullets from gunships with that shield. So the main issue with Lara Croft is she's got to get that shield to go away. Because I feel if she can't get past his power shield, then there's not a whole lot that she's going to be able to do to him, and he's pretty much going to wipe the floor. I do know that Lara Croft has quite a bit of money. She is wealthy. She has resources in that nature. She has a cute little butler that runs around her house and follows her around everywhere she goes, that stalks you. If you've played that game, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, he's annoying as heck.
You run out into the backyard, and he's right there. Master Chief has really no need for money. All the resources he has, he carries with him and picks up from his enemies.
Or gets from Cortana.
Oh, yeah, or gets from Cortana. And you cannot discredit Cortana. He has a radar. I mean, good Lord. He's going to... If Lara Croft is moving, he's going to know. So it's going to be a little difficult to catch him off guard. I just don't see a whole lot that Lara Croft is going to be able to do versus Master Chief. And that's not even counting the fact that he has power shields and
power ups,
invisibility and warthogs and all this stuff available to him.
Yeah.
I just don't see how she's going to pull it out. I think my professional opinion, Master Chief is going to dominate Lara Croft. So that moves us into the 4 and 5 seed with Ryu versus Samus.
Ooh.
This one's going to be an interesting one. I've been thinking long about this because you've got two blasters here. You've got Samus from Metroid. And a little bit of history about her. She was introduced in 1986. So apparently I'm the guy covering the 80s.
You're not the only one.
This Samus was the first female lead character in a video game.
That's worth some points.
Yeah, definitely. I don't believe without Samus, Lara Croft would be around or any of the other female protagonists. The final reveal at the end of Metroid is, I believe, considered one of the most shocking reveals because up to that point, all protagonists were male or anthropomorphic elf-like characters. So she's got some chutzpah. We've got Ryu, who is the originator of the fireball move from the Street Fighter games.
How do you get?
Yes, thank you. Ow, my ears.
Well, if you're really playing Street Fighter, it sounds like this. Hadouken! 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 Hadouken!
Whoa, whoa. All right, TMI.
Tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah. You're not.
Nah, that's what I thought.
I was introduced to Ryu through Universal Fighting System, the trading card game, which is based on the fighting games. He's a very interesting character. He shoots those blasts. He's really based on karate moves. And he was introduced a year after Samus in 1987. So this is a very tough matchup. Samus can shrink herself into a tiny ball of energy and roll around, basically avoiding his fireball blasts. But as soon as she stands up, I just believe it's going to be game over. I think that the Hadouken is going to blast through her armor, and his spinning kick will just send her flying. I don't believe that she's going to get enough time to power up her blaster and really take him out. So in this case, I'm going to have to go with Ryu.
Awesome. That brings us to our last matchup in the right bracket. Number 2 versus number 7. We have Sonic the Hedgehog versus Nathan Drake.
Oh.
This is very quickly turning into the Ultimate Super Smash Brothers tournament.
Yes.
So, Nintendo and folks, please take note.
We love you.
Please don't sue us.
Please don't sue us. We love you.
So, in the number 2 seed, Sonic the Hedgehog, as the Sega developers have described him, is a blue 15-year-old anthropomorphic hedgehog who has the ability to run at supersonic speeds and the ability to curl into a ball, primarily to attack enemies. Whereas Nathan Drake is considered to be the mascot for the PlayStation 3, designed off of Daredevil's Johnny Knoxville, actor Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones, and many different pulp magazines. He is considered to be the combination of Lara Croft and Indiana Jones, but more of a relatable character, and being one of the first male leads in a video game series that have not been treated like a sex object, is what Wikipedia actually says. The interesting thing to note about Sonic is Sonic's been around, of course, since the Sega Genesis era, and his biggest claims are his supersonic speed and the eventuality that come with Sonic 2 and further of being able to expand upon that, and adding in Tails and Knuckles to the scenario, as friends Shadow actually came in at one point in time. But the interesting thing is Nathan Drake has a similar party with Sully and his two female love interests, and this small, almost army contingent that he could get together as well. I think looking at this, if this were a race, Sonic would obviously win. But similar to what Derek was talking about with his first one with Mega Man and Q-Bert, in the realm in which they're in, I think is when you see their strengths come forward. Obviously, Sonic has the speed thing, so he can run circles around Nathan Drake. But Nathan Drake has access to guns. He has no shield, per se, but he also doesn't really have life. It's more if he gets shot enough times, he dies. But he can, revive back from that, similar to Marcus Fenix in Gears of War. But I think what you could see here is, if you're in Sonic's world, there are a lot of ramps everywhere. But Sonic really, his jumping ability is hindered by his size. But apparently Nathan Drake has some superhuman ability to jump across cliffs and so forth. And you can ask anyone that's watched me play the game. That's exactly what it is. There is no way that he could make these jumps if it were not a video game. So you've got strength versus speed. You've got guns versus his spinning attack. I mean, I think in the end, I think I would have to go with Nathan Drake. And that's going to seem like an upset because he is the lower seed here. But I think the gun would play out because he does have to stop. Sonic does have to stop.
If Sonic has gold rings, though, he can just keep going.
Yeah, exactly.
But that that one momentary pause could be one shot and take him down.
That's true.
So, do you think it'll be the it'll be friends versus friends and Nathan versus Sonic's friends?
It'd be like a horrible gang war. Sonic does have the advantage of Tails that can fly, and none of Nathan Drake's friends can fly. But I still would put my vote on Nathan Drake.
All I have to say is, sure is hard to hit something that's running at supersonic speed.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, too. How are you going to hit it if you can't see
it? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that has been round one, the Sweet 16 for the Video Game Madness. We are going to hold off on establishing a fact until the end of the March Madness block, and it's going to be a madness effect. So just stay tuned, because I'm sure as this progresses, good Lord, if Qbert wins, there's going to be a riot. That's all I'm going to say on that.
That is for sure.
For all you Qbert fans out there, we love you, and please don't sue us.
Please don't sue us.
Just remember that to go onto our Facebook page, look for the polls that are coming out, and we will be updating this bracket every week.
At the end of the results,
and then next week we'll post the results.
Yep.
And then it'll repeat. You'll vote. The next week we'll post the results. Yep. It's a little different from our 2-week format, but we wanted to keep it fresh and alive and updated and make it seem like these things are moving instead of doing this 2-week block.
So once we open the voting, you'll get 1 week to vote. Once that is done, voting will close. We'll prep our next episode and release the results, so you can be ready for the next Friday that when polling starts again, you are ready to vote on the Elite Eight, Final Four, and the eventual winner of Video Game Madness
2012. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
See you.
Check us out on Facebook.